WATD presents John Paul, the Car Doctor. All things automotive. Have questions? Call 781-837-4900. Now, here's John Paul, the Car Doctor.
And good Sunday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Car Doctor program on 95.9 WATD. Everything good in the studio there, Jesse?
Oh, it's just perfect.
All right, good. How's the studio remodel coming, by the way?
A lot faster than I thought it would. They're actually making some progress.
Well, that's good. That's good, because I understand there's all brand new electronics going, so all kinds of new stuff to learn how to use, so that should be exciting, right?
Yeah, it'll be another flawless show, you know, as usual.
Absolutely. Well, welcome to the Car Doctor program on 95.9 WATD, where you can listen and call in and do all kinds of stuff. And also, you can always find the podcasts of programs afterwards. I answered a question one day about somebody asked me if I liked electric cars. What's the deal? It seems like I talk about them, and then I talk about cars that make 1,000 horsepower. And, you know, I said, I like everything with wheels on it. In fact, I'm starting to become a fan of e-bikes and e-bikes, electric bicycles. You know, I've found out they're actually fun. And with us on the phone is Ronnie Hsu. She is the overseas sales manager for Fido Electric Bikes. Fido Electric Bikes are pretty cool. Ronnie, thank you for joining us on the Car Doctor program today.
Thank you. Nice to talk with you guys. Thank you, Paul.
Well, it's This is a bicycle company that I hadn't heard of before, and you have some pretty amazing bicycles. One of the first ones that I saw was the compact folding bicycle that had an incredibly long range, and you could fold it up and you could wheel it into your apartment if you wanted to.
Yeah. Did you mean the Fido X?
Yes.
Yes. Actually, I can explain why we have a so good design, because recently I just visited a lot of the dealer in America, and everybody told me, with your words, because everybody likes the construction design. As I said, our owner, our founder is our CTO, so he focused on the electric bike industry for more than 8 years. He will scan all the customer needs from the forum, from the Facebook, from the Instagram. Everybody saying about e-bikes, he will make some remember. And we will, based on all the electric bike rider needs, to design our bike. So our best folding bike, Fido X, very good product. We launched in 2021 and got German IF Industrial Design Awards and crowdfunded over $1.5 million in the Indiegogo. So for now, we already sell many years for this bike, but this bike is very unique for us, and especially we designed the seat battery module by ourselves. We kind of changed the industry, because some battery will settle down in the frame, but this time we just change the battery module into the seat post, so it will be more more neat and more polished for a folding bag. Yeah.
One of the things that I looked at when I look at bicycles, I look at bicycles almost like I look at cars. I look at how well they're constructed. And one of the first thing I noticed was how good the welding was, how good the paint quality was. It's compared to some other ones, especially other bicycles that I've seen, other e-bikes I've seen at some of the like big department stores, the quality just seems much better. The company really pays attention to how well the bikes are put together and how they're constructed, and also how easy they are to assemble when they show up in a big box.
Actually, for the riding, especially for this folding bag, we put more effort on the design. You know, sometimes the current technology not very popular for the whole how to say, the neat wedding into one bite. So our owner just tried many times in our laboratory, and finally we got a good design and the polish and good whiting for the fido eggs. And why our qualities look so good, because we do our battery module by ourselves. Actually, in our factory, we have our own battery assembly module. We will buy each cell from the company, and we will do some tests if this battery, if this cell is fully charged. So if this qualifies, we will combine in our factory. It means every Fido e-bag, the battery module is really fully charged and will commit the real range. So, this is the part of our quality. It's part of the quality improvement.
It sounds like quality is sort of one of the key things in the company. And you've come up with this multi-function bike, the T2 bike, and that one's brand new, and that one really seems like, I just wrote a review about it, and it really seems like for a lot of people, it could take the place of a car in a lot of places, because it could be used for delivery service, it could be used for running errands, it's that long tail design, so extended wheelbase design, and you could easily mount like saddlebags on it or a box on the back of it. Looks like if you were somebody who was delivering food through Uber Eats or DoorDash, you could easily do it on this type of bicycle. It might, for some people, it might actually, depending on weather conditions and all, it might actually take the place of a second vehicle in a household.
Sorry, can you repeat your question again?
Just the idea that this T2 bike could possibly take the place of a second vehicle in someone's household.
It's really a good, like, when we talk electric bag is like kind of the part of the imagination is MACC. Actually, this intelligent transportation. So whatever the car and the bag is part of the intelligent city transportation method. So it will become a future of the people transportation, and the electric bike will be the most popular in future, because the long range and effortless and friendly environment. So especially go back to T2, T2 kind of meet our current target market, because a lot of people need a cargo bag. They need to ship their food, or they need to transportation some goods from their house, and especially they will send their children to school. So T2 is good design for, we just enlarge the back seat, so there can be keys on the back seat. So the people just have more keys, because we can put two people maybe a little bit longer of back seat. So I can see T2 is a good design, and for until we launch now, is a lot of customers and dealers want to buy from us, want to make order right now.
Well, and that's a good point. Your bikes currently, at least in the United States, are sold directly through the company. You don't really have a dealer network yet, do you?
Yeah, we have, right? We have dealer network.
Okay. But I was amazed when you order directly through your website, how quickly they show up. It took no time at all for one of your bicycles to show up, and the way it was packaged, when it's kind of neat. You guys actually have a YouTube video of how to take it out of the box, which, of course, I didn't watch till after I took it out of the box. But the idea that you could take it out of the box, all the parts were there. You included some basic tools to assemble it, a very simple manual. But it took really no time to put it together. And like you pointed out, it came with the battery fully charged. It assembly took less than an hour, and I was off riding it after that. It and again, it took almost no time to order it and have it shipped. It was a very quick process.
Yeah, of course, because we know currently some electric bike user is not very professional. So we know some of them is not very good eye to assemble a bag or change some parts. So we will do our best to give the customers best experience, let them to know, let them to use, like a user phone. When you got it, you will know how to use it, how to download the app. It will be like the customers get a more easy way to use e-bag.
And speaking of apps, your company has an app as well, right?
Yes, we have.
Tell us about that a little bit. Tell us about the app and how the app works with the bicycle.
Yeah, the app is very good connection between our company and our global riders. Currently, our app can connect with our bike, use Bluetooth function. So if you after you connect it, you can use your phone. It's the app. You can use the app to unlock and lock your bike. And you can turn on the light, turn off the light. And you can track in your mail in your app each time. And then we have a global community. So you can make a post on our app because you can see the global Fido user in the community. Everybody can talk. Everybody can share their bike, their photo, and their opinion. And then in the future, we will connect with our bike to make some discount coupon. And everybody use the app to can recognize our coupon and to buy from our online and offline dealer directly. We'll be do more connection with the app and the customers, because we know everybody use phone right now. So app is very good for the bag. Even except the app, we have our own watch as well. Watch is a little bit a same function with a traditional watch. You can check your heart rate and other data in your watch, and then you can use your watch to open your bag and close your bag. Open the lights and checking the mail as well.
Yeah. No, the bikes, the other thing I liked about the bikes, and I'm a car person, not a bike person, but I recognize things like the Shimano derailleurs, which are a quality product. The seats are a quality seat. And the idea that it has hydraulic style disc brakes was very impressive, because this is unlike the rim mounted brakes. The hydraulic disc brakes work really well when it's wet weather out. So it becomes much more of an all season type of bicycle. I don't know that I would ride it in the snow, but I think if you were out somewhere and doing an errand, at least that your bike is going to stop well because of the type of brake system in it.
Yeah, because use this very qualified component. It's very good. It's very important for us, because this kind of the part of the quality control, we need to control. We need to confirm the brake, especially the brake. It's very very important for the customer's safety. So in this part, we will put more attention to solving all the like Shimano, and our motor is Mivas, and brake is the trick. Like you said, it's very important for us to make sure the bike safety for our user. We all from the user point to design the bike. Like you said, you are a car person, not the bike person. Me too. I have driven my car more than 10 years. But, you know, especially from current CD transportation situation, is a lot of traffic jam, and especially the car is not very friendly for the environment. So when I found the electric bike, it's really good design, you know. Mm. Electric bike will give you more less hurt about your knee, because, you know, conventional bike will need more effort to riding, but electric bike will give you less effort, and you can go to long range. So it's a little bit can replace the car in some miles, will get you more fun, and you can stop everywhere. You know, the stop car is really difficult thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we let you go, you folks just came out with a new lightweight bicycle, a lightweight e-bike that mm-hmm. is made out of carbon fiber. Is that right?
Yeah. We already launched our new carbon bike in our website. Model name is C31. I think it's really good design because a lot of the actually the back specialists, they are really like this design, and the carbon is the frame and the back strap of the back. It's really light and the ride is smooth.
Yeah, and that for people that want to bring their bikes, up stairs or something, having a lightweight bike is easier. But, you know, going back to the original bike we talked about, the folding bike, once it's folded, it wheels pretty easily, and you could easily bring it inside a building without any problem. Again, you guys thought this out pretty well, and the folding bike is an ideal bike for somebody who's going, you know, going camping or on a boat or something, and the boat is big enough where they can put a bicycle and bring their boat up to the dock and take the bike and go do some errands and get provisions and things like that. So you've sort of appealed to all different kinds of customers with this, and the idea that that these are available, and price wise, looking at the price, I know the folding bike, I was showing it to someone, and they had said their wife just bought something similar. I told them the price of your bike, and they were like, I paid about $400 more, and it has less range, and it's not as handy. So your prices are very reasonable compared to some of the others on the market.
Yeah, of course. And I go to your first point is our folding bag. I think the folding bag is really good for the camp as well, because it will be easy to folding in the back of your car, and easy folding, and you can put on the boat. Even the C31 is not very easy to folding, but it's really light. You can lift it up on your on the back of the car, and good for the boat as well. I think so. It's not very too heavy. And go to the second point. Yeah, from my point, we hope everybody can ride electric bikes in the future. Now, because before 10 years, I saw there's a lot of electric bikes with a higher price, and you know some customers really want to ride an e-bike, but in order the high price, and they will not for this idea. But currently, we can control our good quality, and we can control our own cost, and then we can give all the profit to the customers. We want the customers can ride. We want everybody can ride electric bike, not for their price or other issues. So we just kind of our emission is not very focused on the to get some more profit from the customers, or it's not like this kind of thing.
Yeah, and if people want to get more information, the website is the best place, and it's FIIDO.com, right?
Yes, yes, you're right.
Well, Ronnie, I want to thank you for taking some time out of your Sunday morning and joining us on the Car Doctor radio program. It has been a pleasure, and the bicycles, I encourage people, if they're, as spring is starting to be here in New England, it's a great time to be out on a bicycle, and if you're maybe just a little bit out of shape and you haven't ridden in a while, doing it on an e-bike makes it that much more pleasurable. And when you get a little bit tired, you get a little bit of assist, or you can use it however you want. So again, thank you for taking a little time out of your Sunday morning and joining us on the Car Doctor radio program.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. Thank you for interviewing as well. Yeah.
All right, take care. Bye-bye now. Why don't we take a break, pay some bills? My name is John Paul. This is a Car Doctor program. When we come back, if you went to the Boston Auto Show yesterday or Friday, I would like to hear from you. Give us a call at 781-837-4900. Just curious how it went. I heard very little about the Boston Auto Show. In fact, I emailed, there was a contact number at the bottom of the show, and never really heard back from them. So I'd like to hear how it went. It looked like there was a fair amount of manufacturers there at the Boston Convention Center. So if you went, I'd like to hear from you, 781-837-4900. If you have a question about your car, give us a call at 781-837-4900. And when we come back, we got a bunch of emails over the week, people with car problems and car questions. My name's John Paul. This is the Car Doctor program. You're listening on 95.9 WATD. We'll be right back.
Start your Sunday off right with brunch at the Old Hitching Post in Hanson. The Old Hitching Post offers a full buffet brunch every Sunday from 10 to 1. Fill up on all your favorites like eggs and bacon, sausage, home fries, French toast casserole, mac and cheese, homemade hash, fresh seafood, rice, veggies, fresh fruit, quiche, yogurt parfaits, pastries, ham, omelets, eggs benedict, and more. The Old Hitching Post Sunday brunch from 10 to 1 at 48 Spring Street, Route 58 in Hanson. Online at oldhp.com. That's oldhp.com.
AAA is with you at every moment in your life. They have 24-hour, 7 roadside assistance, which covers you in any car you're driving or riding in, even a rental or your friend's wheels. They have great member rates on home and auto insurance, savings on travel, hotels, and rental cars, and discounts on hundreds of your favorite brands. You're covered on and off the road. Learn more at aaa.com/join.
Hey there, folks. It's Quinn Kelly reminding you to tune in Sunday night at 5 for the South Shore's first voice in sports talk radio, The Sports Exchange. Unmatched coverage of local high school action as well as a relatable voice on all things Boston Pro Sports, we've got you covered live at 5 every Sunday night. Have a question for our host, missed last week's show, or just want to share a great sports story? You can find us on Twitter at SE on WATD. But remember, mark your calendar, folks, and we'll see you Sunday night at 5 for the Sports Exchange on 95.9 WATD.
Make an appointment Sunday morning at 11 for John Paul, the Car Doctor, on 95.9 WATD. Now, back to the Car Doctor.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program on 95.9 WATD. It is an interesting, you're here where I happen to be in Florida, or whether you're up in New England, weather's been weird. This winter I've had my heat on more than I've had my air conditioner on. It's been very windy. I remember Jesse on several occasions when he was doing the weather forecast saying, there goes my fence. Did you ever lose your fence? Or not? Maybe Jesse left me now. So the weather has been sort of weird, but it's just one of those things. So some of the emails that came in this week, people with car problems. Yes, we have people with car problems, and some pretty interesting ones. This person has a question about their 2019 Chevrolet Z06 Corvette, and it has an electronic selector that changes that allows the driver to change settings in the car. And one of the settings is an eco setting. And the eco setting, in his email, it says, it's been brought to my attention that after much use in the eco mode, you can somehow damage the engine. Something about valve lifters. Do you know anything about this? First off, it's a Corvette. Why would you drive an eco mode, especially a Z06 Corvette? But I guess it gives you that option, and it probably helps with EPA fuel economy. I don't think so. There are literally thousands and thousands of GM engines with displacement on demand, and that's what they call it, where hydraulically it shuts off some of the cylinders. So in this particular 8-cylinder engine, under a light load, it goes into 4-cylinder mode. So I suppose if you continually drove in that eco mode all the time, could it damage the valve lifters? Maybe, but you would have to be awfully, you would have to be, have kind of a feather touch on the gas pedal to have that happen. So I would say probably not. Yeah, I don't see it. And I did search all of GM technical bulletins and didn't find anything to indicate a problem. I did see a mention on a Corvette forum that people said, you know, don't do this, you'll destroy the engine. But nobody could put out any fact about why this would happen. So I just got a text from a friend of mine, and he's kind of joking with me, but he says, I have a dead raccoon under my hood, what should I do? Remove your dead raccoon. That's what you should do. He stopped by to visit, and there was a dead raccoon. So hopefully it's not under his hood. Actually, when my wife went back up north for a week, she went and got the old Volkswagen that we leave up in up on Cape Cod, and she went to open the hood because it was on a battery tender. I keep the battery fully charged by keeping on a battery tender. And she went to open the hood, and some seeds and stuff fell out from under the hood. So the first thing her and her sister did while they had the hood open was look around to make sure there was nothing nesting under there, dead raccoons or not. But, you know, did a mouse or a mole or something decide to, well, that hood insulation looks like a good place to make a nest? Well, there was, fortunately, it was a temporary home at best, I guess, and there was no chewed up wires or anything like that that can sometimes happen. So that's all good. Somebody else wrote to me and says, I have a 2017 Genesis G80. And this is kind of an interesting one. It's a 3.8-liter engine with all-wheel drive. About 4 years ago, the car was dead as a doornail. And they said the local Genesis dealer came to the house, picked up the car. They diagnosed the trouble as a bad battery, and as a Goodwill courtesy, they replaced it at no charge. It's now 3 years later, and it's happened again. And it's sort of interesting that, you know, the average life of a battery, I don't know where this person's really from, but the average life of a battery in New England is about 5 years on average. You know, sometimes you go longer, sometimes you go less. In hot weather climates, Arizona, Central Florida, places like that, we see battery life as short as 2 years. Although, that being said, the battery in our 2015 Volkswagen is now, I replaced it at the end of last year, and it was a 2015 car, battery was put in 2014, so that battery was 9 years old. So what attributed the long battery life? I think having the car driven fairly regularly, which is always helpful. And secondly, having it on a battery maintainer. I happen to use, for the most part, battery tenders. And having it there, making sure the battery stays fully charged, I really think is what adds to the longevity of the battery. When batteries cycle from almost dead to almost full charge, and this, we saw a lot of that during the height of COVID, where people weren't driving their cars. They were leaving them for a month, car wouldn't start, they get a jump start, it never really fully charged the battery up, and those batteries ended up being replaced. A lot of batteries were replaced with pretty short life. So yes, you can you know, maintain the battery the best you can. And I've mentioned in the past that I have this little boat, a little small boat, and when I don't use the boat, when it's sitting at the dock not far from my house, I have a solar battery charger, a little solar panel that I leave out and hook it up to the battery. And I'm a little worried about it in one way, that it is sort of an unregulated power supply. When I hook it up and just put a voltmeter on it, it's about 17, 18, maybe all the way up to 19 volts. When I put it on the battery, it drops right down to like 14 volts. So the battery becomes the regulator for the solar panel. That's not my favorite way to do that, and it's probably because this is a fairly inexpensive solar panel charger. I have a better one at home at the other house up north. It actually runs through a battery maintainer, so it maintains the smart battery charger. We've had the folks from the smart chargers on before, and I like the idea of this. I didn't realize the solar panel was quite as big as it was, so a little too big to leave on the back of the boat, which is why I didn't use it. But I like the idea it's a regulated supply, so it keeps the battery fully charged that way. But anyway, so this person 3 years later had to put a battery in. It was replaced at no charge. Then 3 years later, it happened again. He called the dealership, and this was where it got interesting. He was informed that they're no longer permitted to sell and service the Genesis-branded vehicles. Well, it must have been a Hyundai dealership that also sold Genesis. And for whatever reason, maybe they didn't have the certified technicians or whatever the case is, they said they can't service their vehicle. I guess I find that a little bit odd, that providing they have essentially the same help, why couldn't they still work on it? I can understand if it was under warranty, yeah, they couldn't do it because they no longer provide warranty, but why they couldn't work on it is sort of odd. If the same person works there, if, you know, Jesse's in the shop and he worked on the car 3 years ago, why couldn't he work on it now? But who knows? Who knows what the real rules are? Their question is what they're really concerned about, because the Genesis has a lot of electronic features, is they're concerned about getting the battery replaced and making sure that that when the battery is disconnected, they won't lose all their custom settings that they've entered into the various computers over the last few years. So, you know, seat memory, radio memory, you know, things for the lane departure warning and correction devices, all that sort of stuff. So they want to know where to do that. And really, anybody should be able to do that, whether they use a type of battery memory device that some of them plug into the OBD port. So under the dash where you plug in, where they do a sticker, they plug into that port, or which those work most of the time, not all of the time. Or else you do what we do at work when we change a battery. We use our jumpstart box. Very simple. We attach the negative cable of the jumpstart box to some negative, you know, some piece of metal under the hood, alternator bracket, someplace where you get a good ground. And then we take the positive cable and we attach it to the positive battery cable of the car. And now what we've done is, temporarily, we're running two batteries in the car, one for the car and one for the off the jump box. Disconnect the positive cable, and now you have the car's computers being kept alive with the jumpstart box. Change the battery, put it back in, repeat the procedure, put the positive cable back on, put the negative cable back on, and the car's computer shouldn't lose all the settings. So it should be relatively simple. It should be something that anybody should be able to do without too much work. Takes a little bit more time because you want to make sure that you save, you know, all the memory functions that way. So a little bit more time. You do need some sort of battery jumpstart box or something to be able to do that. But that way you also don't lose not just the things like radio memory and stuff like that, but also the car's computer has, as well as the vehicle operates, has gotten used to you. So when you disconnect the battery sometimes, you may even find that when you hook the battery back up, it doesn't start. It cranks over. Maybe it cranks over, it starts and it stalls, and you go, well, it's never stalled before. Well, the computer's relearning things. So it's relearning, well, okay, I started and it stalled. I need to raise the idle up so it stays idling properly. And there are times where you absolutely want to clear out the memory of the car. So maybe your car has this weird glitch where it's doing some funny stuff and it just doesn't run right. And I first read this with Honda vehicles, that if all of a sudden weird stuff starts to happen in the car, disconnect the battery, positive and negative cables, jumper those two cables together with either hold the two cable ends together or take a good heavy jumper lead, jumper them together, and what that will do is that will discharge any of the capacitors inside the electrical system. And then when you hook the battery back up, it's going to learn everything over and over from actually zero. This can be the case where today's transmissions are all computer controlled. You drive the car a certain way, you sell it, trade it in, whatever the case is. Somebody else buys it and drives it differently, and they're like, well, it just doesn't shift right. It shifts funny. It shifts earlier. It shifts late. And what they'll do sometimes is go in, and they'll just disconnect the battery, leave it off, put it back together, and now all of a sudden that computer is going to start to watch the way you drive the car, and it's going to get used to the way you are, and it's going to work normally. So just something to be aware of. Also, the battery in this Genesis is a little bit unique. In fact, I tried to look it up to see whether AAA could provide a battery. We don't keep this battery in stock for some reason. It's an AGM battery, so it's a glass mat battery versus a lead acid battery. It's a high cold cranking amp. It's 950 cold cranking amps, which is a really powerful battery. It has a high reserve capacity, 190 minutes, which tells you that this battery is doing a lot of work. If it needs that kind of reserve capacity, there's a lot of stuff staying on in this car. So you want to make sure you get the right battery for the car. It's a AGM 105 is what it's called. But again, you want to make sure it's that 950 cold cranking amp battery with that high reserve, because if the reserve numbers are low, maybe you're going to find one with a fairly high cranking amp, but if the reserve numbers are low, you're going to find these computers, draw a fair amount of electricity all the time. So you want to be careful about that. One more question came in. The person says, I currently own a 2017 Toyota Highlander Limited with 87,000 miles on it. It's all-wheel drive and has a six-cylinder engine. Our previous vehicle was a Chevy Equinox, which we enjoyed except for the four-cylinder engine that struggled on trips upstate. And for that reason, we opted for the six-cylinder Highlander. I have major reservations about owning the newer model Highlander because it's only available with a 2.4 liter or 2.5 liter hybrid version. So no V6 in the Highlander anymore. Maintaining speed up steep hills, such as up in New Hampshire or any place where there's hills and mountains or inclines while in cruise control, their previous Equinox had these very uncomfortable surges in RPM. Are there better alternatives, or would the hybrid engine combination sort of compensate for that? I think time is what's compensated for that. You'd have to drive it to decide, but in 2017, the V6 engine made 295 horsepower and 365 foot-pounds of torque. The turbo four-cylinder engine in the 2024 model makes a little less horsepower, 265 horsepower, but it actually makes more torque. It makes 310 foot-pounds of torque, which should give you more of that uphill grunt you need to, you know, go up hills, these hills and mountains you're going to go up through. The hybrid version is more about fuel economy than it is about power. It's actually a little bit lower. It's 243 horsepower and 263 foot-pounds of torque, about the same torque as the old V6 engine. So I really think the turbo four-cylinder might be a good alternative to the V6. I remember the first turbo four-cylinder Toyota product that I drove. I just assumed it was a V6. I got out and opened the hood and counted spark plugs. And sure enough, it's a four-cylinder turbo. I was really impressed for it. As far as alternatives to the Highlander, Honda Pilot, always a good choice. Hyundai Palisade and Kia Telluride, which is everybody's darling SUV right now still, those numbers probably more closely match the horsepower numbers of your 2017 Highlander. So the Telluride or the Palisade might be a good alternative to that. But if you're a fan of Toyota because of quality, or you know, you like your dealer or whatever the case is, I would go take one for a really good ride, the four-cylinder turbo. Take them for a ride and see what you think. Turbocharged engines are pretty phenomenal the way they work. The V6, you know, turbocharged engine in some of the Ford trucks, for instance, way more powerful than the V8 engines they replaced, the 5-liter engines they replaced. A little bit better fuel economy, smoother performance. Real question is, over time, how are they going to last? No one really knows. I did get an email from somebody that had it was a F-150 with the twin turbo V6 in it. No, it was a Ford Transit van with the twin turbo V6 in it. And the timing chain failed, which happens when these get high miles on them. Had about 260,000-270,000, something like that on it. The chain failed. It broke at low speed. They're hoping it's okay. It won't be, by the way. And they said they tried to turn the engine with a breaker bar and it wouldn't budge. It's broken. The only real way to know, pull the spark plugs out, pull the valve covers off, look and see if there's valves hung up. Chances are there probably are. And and take the plugs out and take a borescope, one of those little things that you can look in and see a display on the screen. And once you do that, you'll know if there's damage inside the cylinder walls from valves breaking, if the damage on top of cylinder heads. You'll see it all with the borescope and you'll know what is in store, but chances are a problem. They also said, can I take a non-turbo engine and put it in this? If you have enough money, time, and expertise, sure you can. But it will, you know, you have to keep in mind, you're going to have to change the whole computer system over, because computer system's designed for this twin turbo, not for the non-the conventional aspirated one. So you're not going to be able to do that. So a couple things to keep in mind. Why don't we take another break, pay some bills, and we'll find out where Jesse was last week when he wasn't here. He was someplace else. Let's find out where he is. You'll listen to the Car Doctor program on 95.9 WATD. If you have a question or even a text, you can send us a text at 781-837-4900. We'll be right back.
AAA is with you at every moment in your life. They have 24/7 roadside assistance, which covers you in any car you're driving or riding in, even a rental or your friend's wheels. They have great member rates on home and auto insurance, savings on travel, hotels, and rental cars, and discounts on hundreds of your favorite brands. You're covered on and off the road. Learn more at aaa.com/join.
Start your Sunday off right with brunch at the Old Hitching Post in Hanson. The Old Hitching Post offers a full buffet brunch every Sunday from 10 to 1. Fill up on all your favorites like eggs and bacon, sausage, home fries, French toast casserole, mac and cheese, homemade hash, fresh seafood, rice, veggies, fresh fruit, quiche, yogurt parfaits, pastries, ham, omelets, eggs benedict, and more. The Old Hitching Post Sunday brunch from 10 to 1 at 48 Spring Street, Route 58 in Hanson. Online at oldhp.com. That's oldhp.com.
Registration for Massasoit's Fall 2024 semester is now open. Whether you are looking for a career certificate, an associate's degree, or just taking a few classes, Massasoit will take you closer to your goals. Benefit from more than 60 degree and certificate programs, experienced instructors, small class sizes, low tuition costs, and transferable courses. Enroll now for the fall semester at Massasoit Community College. Visit massasoit.edu. And be sure to tune in every Monday night at 9 for Massasoit Today on 95.9 WATD.
Make an appointment Sunday morning at 11 for John Paul, the Car Doctor, on 95.9 WATD. Now, back to the Car Doctor.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program on 95.9 WATD. And Captain Keith, who sent me the, I got a dead raccoon under my hood, also said he has a Ford Explorer with the, I think, the twin turbo V6 in it. He says the water pump's driven by the timing chains. The timing chains break or the water pump breaks and it becomes a disaster. You have to pull the engine. Absolutely. I kind of wonder sometimes. I was looking at a V6 engine in a Toyota 4Runner, and they put the starter under the intake manifold. Now, is it terrible to take the intake manifold off to get to the starter? It's not terrible, but it's not convenient by any means. So why would they? I guess in theory it sounds like a good idea. We'll run the water pump with the timing chain until it all breaks. And in fact, somebody else I know had that. Their water pump started to leak. They were on vacation. They were down in Plymouth. It's like $2,900 by the time they were done because they did the chains and all that stuff, and it gets really expensive. Let's talk to Walter in Weymouth. Walter, good morning. Walter.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. What can we do for you?
Well, I was just wondering why we couldn't have electric cars. Most of them are coming in with all-electric battery. What's wrong with a 3-horsepower generator to generate your own power with gas or propane or whatever? How come they haven't come out with something like that?
Well, they actually, there are some manufacturers who've sort of done something like that. The Chevrolet Volt, not the Bolt, the one with the V that they don't make anymore, that one had a 4-cylinder engine, and the 4-cylinder engine was essentially a generator. So what would happen is the car would have this electric battery, and you could drive, you know, so many miles on electric. And when the battery discharged, the gasoline engine would kick in, and what it would do is it basically charged up the battery, and that's what kept it going forever and ever and ever until you ran out of gas. BMW had a little electric car. I think it was the i3, and it had a 2-cylinder gasoline engine in it that it did sort of the same thing. When you ran out of battery power, the gasoline engine would come on, and the gasoline engine would be a generator that would make enough electricity to put it back into the battery, and the battery would continue to run. It had a very small fuel tank. I think it only had a couple gallon fuel tank, but it was enough. Yeah. It was enough to get you where you were going to go. I think the idea behind it is having the simplicity of, and we'll call it simple, an electric car that's purely electric that doesn't have a gasoline generator that has to rely on, you know, compressed natural gas or gasoline or diesel or whatever the case is. You know, keep the pure electric ones pure electric and keep the hybrids. And plug-in hybrids sort of, they're kind of the same way. I mean, if you went out and bought a plug-in hybrid that had a 4-cylinder engine, you would, you know, go 30, 40, 50 miles on the battery. Then it would act like a regular hybrid. And at the end of the day, you plug it back in and you go 30, 40, 50 miles again on pure battery until you decided to plug it in again. So the idea is sort of there. I think the other issue might be that, you know, electric cars, the technology is expensive. And then if they all of a sudden throw a generator in it, I have seen on the internet, so who knows if it's true or not, something like a Tesla with a, you know, big generator mounted on a trailer hitch behind the car. So, you know, it sounds kind of dumb, and it looked kind of dumb, and I don't know if somebody did it just to get, you know, clicks on the internet or something. But, I mean, it's certainly possible. The other thing is, you know, some people say, why don't they make the whole top of the car out of solar panels, and that can charge the batteries up. You would have to make a really big solar panel for that to work. Yeah. So, I mean, the possibility is there, certainly, to be able to do something like that. But I think right now companies like, you know, Tesla and, you know, Hyundai and Kia, that have pretty successful electric cars, they want to keep the electrics pure electric. And if you want something different, go buy a hybrid or a plug-in hybrid. You know, somebody was telling me the other day about, you know, so the person drove cross-country in an electric car, and they didn't really think much of it. They said, you know, every 3 hours or every 4 hours they stop. The car tells them where to charge. They take their dog for a walk, go use the restroom. 20 minutes later, the car is mostly charged back up and they're ready to go. Personally, I'm not ready for an electric car yet because first off, I don't think I can afford the one I want. And the other thing is, where I currently live, we live in a small cottage with a limited electrical service, and we live in a, you know, down here in Florida in the wintertime, we live in a mobile home with kind of limited electrical service. So the idea of being able to put a 40-amp charger on the side of the house kind of kind of limits that a little bit, although as long as I wasn't using it while the air conditioner was on or using it while the dryer's on, it would probably be fine. I'm just not prepared to quite do that yet. Yeah, so, but I think, you know, the, you know, I think we're really in sort of that, I don't know, I think we're sort of in that golden age of cars right now where, you know, people talked about back in the 1900s, you could buy a diesel or a gas car or a steam car or, you know, battery car. I mean, Henry Ford's wife, you know, Eleanor Ford, you know, she drove an electric car because she couldn't start a Model T. You know, so so the idea that, you know, right now you can go buy an electric car, you can buy a plug-in hybrid, you can buy a regular hybrid, or you can go buy a 750-horsepower Hellcat if you want. You know, there's a lot of choices out there. You know, you can get some, a lot of variety of different kinds of vehicles. You can, I mean, there's still, you know, I wish, you know, prices didn't climb as fast as they did, but at least at least there's some, a lot of choice out there for consumers to be able to buy what they want.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Take care, Walter.
That answers my question.
All right.
Thank
take
you.
Care. Yep. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Our phone number is 781-837-4900, and Jesse was among the missing last week. Where were you?
Made my way all the way out to Hinsdale, New York, very western New York.
And you were up doing spooky things for the podcast?
We were, yeah. We there's a house in Hinsdale that they have called the Hinsdale House, very creative name.
Yeah,
it's supposed to be haunted,
so we
spent the night there. It was pretty cool.
Now, do you have all the cool, like, Ghostbusters stuff with you? Do you have the, you know, stuff to measure for spooky stuff?
We do. In fact, this was actually... The problem that I think we had there was we actually brought too much cool new stuff. So we didn't get back to like the roots of the stuff that we usually use, and we used all the fancy new stuff, but it was a lot of fun. Really cool spot. Really depressing town.
Yeah. Besides the depressing town, was it, was there ghosts?
There could have been. There could have been. We got some stuff that we couldn't explain, and that's kind of what we look for. And then we leave it up to the audience to interpret whether or not they think it's a ghost.
Yeah. But you don't have like a laser backpack or anything, just in case.
We actually got that. It's not a backpack, but we got this like new laser grid thing that's super cool. And it like detects things that are in front of you. And if you stand in front of it, it'll show up on the screen as a big red blob, you know, like it'll show your outline. But we kept getting this one thing that kept showing up, and it was like the outline of a person, but it was blue, which means it was colder than what was in the room. And we had no explanation for that, but it was pretty cool. We got it on camera, so we shall
see.
There
you go. There you go. And if people want to find your podcast, how do they do that?
Just anywhere. Just search Hometown Ghost Stories. It's available everywhere you can get a podcast. It's also on YouTube.
There you go. All right. Well, thanks for that. I like to know what you're up to because you have a extremely successful podcast.
Thank you. Yeah. I will say we chose to drive all that way, and that was a hell of a drive. It's like 8 hours back and forth. It's brutal.
And you said the town's kind of is it like one of those former like working class towns that is now kind of nothing to do?
Yeah, a lot of closed businesses, but there just isn't a lot. It's weird because it's very desolate, so there's maybe 2,000 people that live in this town.
Yeah.
Like it's super, super small. But the houses are still like one on top of each other, and I don't know why. Like there's so much space, beautiful mountains, but they none of them have a fence. It's like they're all just still on top of each other somehow. I don't get it.
So it's sort of a town that had a big factory or something, and they stuck a bunch of houses next to each other so people could walk to work, and then the factory closed, and you're left with a bunch of little tiny houses all next to each other.
Yeah, I think so. And the whole, like, once you get into Western Mass and then you get into, you know, New York and Western New York, it all looks exactly the same. Like, there's some beautiful mountain ranges and stuff like that, but for the most part, it's just all of the houses look exactly the same. It's just one 8-hour depressing stretch, but a good time.
But a good time. And you were with your friends. So
yeah, it was cool. Honestly, it was kind of an ideal situation because you had like for these kind of things, sometimes they leave like a chaperone or sometimes there's other people there with you. But for this one, it was a house in the middle of nowhere. They basically toss us the keys. We're like, have fun. See you tomorrow. We're like, awesome. Had a nice little fire pit out back. pretty cool situation, actually.
There you go. Sounds like there was drinking involved. I'm not judging, just saying.
No, just on the ride.
Yeah, all right. Being safe all the time. Hey, somebody else wrote to me, before we go here, somebody else wrote to me, they said they have a 2015 Buick with a V6 engine in it, topped off their coolant reservoir the other day. They were surprised that they had to add about half a gallon of coolant. They parked the car in the garage, they didn't see any leaks. They got under the car the other day, looked, they don't see anything, where anything's leaking from anything. They had similar issues with other GM cars they've owned in the past with Dexcool, which is GM's own coolant. The idea is that coolant coats the inside of the engine blocks to prevent corrosion rather than doing corrosion treatment to the block when they make it. It's the way GM got cheap. And it seems like the coolant just evaporates. Well, it doesn't just evaporate. It does. Well, it does a little bit, but it doesn't just evaporate because it is a closed system. But on the other hand, they also make it so you can check the coolant level. That's why it's not completely sealed up. So you can check it. So the idea is you need to add to it. Not that many years ago, General Motors would recommend a coolant sealer tablet. Stuff looked like Alka-Seltzer. You dropped a couple tablets in the radiator, you let it circulate around, and it would stop these little tiny leaks. You know, some of them were intake manifold, some of them a little bit of head gasket leak, but they would stop these little tiny leaks in the system. I've found that Dexcool needs more attention, and it's important to maintain it too, because if Dexcool runs low and it starts to get too hot, it turns into pudding, sort of this chocolate pudding sort of stuff, and it's just not good for the engine. So fresh coolant periodically, make sure it stays full. Full on Dexcool, at least from all the General Motors training, full is more important than clean. They use dip strips to make sure there's not too acidy, make sure it's protecting the engine at 35 below zero. They are more concerned about how the level of the coolant than they are with, you know, if it looks brownish, that's okay, according to the GM instructors that I talked to. So little bit, you know, just maintain it, open the hood periodically, hopefully at engine oil changes, things like that. They also top off the coolant as necessary. Keep an eye on it. If you start to see it abnormally changing, so if you're changing your oil every 6 months and you go, oh, I have to top off the coolant, add an ounce or two or three, and all of a sudden it becomes I have to add half a gallon, then you got a leak probably internal into the engine. If you don't see anything, they can add a dye to it, check it with an ultraviolet light, but that's about it. So there you go. Remember, if you want to get a hold of me during the week, best way to do that is jpaul, J-P-A-U-L, at aaanortheast.com. And if you want to listen to past programs, you can always go to the podcast. Just look up Car Doctor Radio on any of your podcast sites. I use two different site names, which Jesse tells me I shouldn't. I should only use one. One's on podcast.com, one's on Podbean.com.